Besides, I knew the house was locked up and I was the only one of the two of us who had the key, so I knew darn well that whatever it was, wasn't normal. Billy reached out and patted him on the head. He regretted being short-tempered with him. It was just he was so disappointed, so frustrated, so unnerved that something like this should have happened again after so long. Please God, he thought to himself, don't let it all be starting up again. He put his arm around Gia and then led him towards the front door. I couldn't see anything in the room when I just looked. He told him, you'll be all right now. Come and help me lay the table for supper. Oh, and listen, not a word to anyone about this, all right? You know what I mean? Gia looked up at his father and nodded. Later, Billy left him in the kitchen to get on with laying the table, and checked the front room. He felt as nervous as he had been the night the man appeared at the window. Was this shapeless entity the same figure returned? He opened the door gingerly and stepped in. There was nothing there. Nothing seemed to have been disturbed. He went out and shut the door and stood alone in the hall for a minute, thinking. Perhaps, just perhaps, it had been a trick of the light or Kieran's imagination. True, he was a very perceptive lad and not given to wild imaginings, and you could normally trust his word entirely. But maybe this time he was mistaken? There was always hope. Surely it couldn't all be happening to them all over again? The sound of the front door opening behind him interrupted his thinking. It was Pauline, bustling in with an armful of shopping, beaming all over her face. Give us a hand with these, love, she was asking him, and she an enormous bag of groceries into his arms. Billy took them in later, as he helped her unpack them and got all wrapped up in family talk, put all thoughts of what Gian had said he'd seen firmly to the back of his mind. No. Nothing weird had started happening again. Everything was back to normal. Pauline pushed her plate away from her. Well, that was delicious, if I say so myself, she grinned, so I'm going to reward myself by leaving the washing up till the morning. Billy, you can make me a cup of coffee and bring it to me in front of the television. Kids, you can stay up with me and watch a bit of telly for 1 hour and then put yourselves to bed. Billy chuckled to himself. His master's voice and no mistake. He watched her lead the kids out and into the front room, and then put the kettle on. It had nearly boiled when he heard Pauline calling to Billy, come here a minute, love. He turned off the gas ring and went through to the front room. Pauline was kneeling in front of the television. It's not working, love. I can't make it out. It was fine last night. Billy shot a look across at Gian and raised a finger to lips. His worst fears had come true. It had started again. They were back. 8, September 10, 1977. The moment he saw Kieran that evening, Billy knew something else had happened. A week had passed since he had seen the shapeless figure in the front room, but they hadn't mentioned it to each other since then, and Kieran had been as good as his word and not said anything to the rest of the family. Billy had still clung to the hope that Gian had been mistaken in what he'd seen or had imagined it. But knowing the boy as well as he did, he hadn't really been able to convince himself of that. And now, what was this? Gian was standing at the entrance to the cowsheds, head buried in his hands, trembling. He looked shaken out of his wits. Behind him, standing in the muddy drive, the tractor's engine was still running. It was a Saturday and he had let Gian drive it down to the lower fields to check some fencing. Kay, what on earth's the matter with you? He asked the boy. Gian ran towards him and grabbed his arm. There was someone on the path and I'm sure I hit him, but when I looked around there wasn't anybody there, he gabbled. Billy held him at arm's length and looked at him sternly. Now, Kay, take it easy. Tell me slowly exactly what happened. You hit someone, you say? On the path? Gian nodded, frowning a bewildered frown and still gripping his father's arm. But I don't understand it, Dad. I don't understand. I was just driving up the path, up to the farm from the lower fields, when suddenly, out of nowhere, this person appeared right in front of me, right in front of the tractor, just stepped out in front of you. What person? No, Dad. They didn't step out in front of me. Just appeared out of thin air, Just like that, there in front of me, a lady, dressed all in white, from head to toe, with long hair. She was suddenly there. I couldn't stop, I just went straight into her. I felt the bump as the wheels went over her, but when I jumped on the brakes and looked down, there was nothing there. I looked everywhere, but there was nobody. Billy felt his grip tighten on the boy's shoulders. Gian, you sure about this? He didn't need the boy to answer. His shocked and frightened expression said it all for him. It was broad daylight, Gian's description was precise, and the effect it had had on him was real enough. This time there was no mistake. But a lady in white? What did that mean? Whatever it meant, thought Billy, the same rule must apply. Pauline and the rest of the family were not to hear about it. Maybe this, after all, would be just an isolated incident. Perhaps the last of all. It would be such a shame to stir up old fears needlessly by repeating what happened. He swore Gian to secrecy again and sent him back the farmhouse for his tea. He would follow later. He'd have time to think. Any slender hope that he might have previously harbored that Gian had imagined seeing that shapeless figure in the front room, looked as though it could be ruled out in the light of this new sighting. But did that mean they were in for months more of the same phenomena that had so threatened them before? It couldn't be coincidence that, after a lull in sightings over the past couple of months, the Bsfora people were now getting fresh reports from the area of UFO sightings and strange encounters with spaceman-like figures. He cast his mind back to four recent local newspaper reports. In the first one, an ex-RAF pilot had reported watching six UFOs flying at fantastic speeds, in formation, over Broadhaven. Illustration right of this place made by Runo. In the second one, a five-year-old girl in Lamdaloy had woken up her 11-year-old sister in the middle of the night, screaming that there was a big helicopter with a rainbow-colored man inside it hovering outside their bedroom window. When her sister had looked, she'd seen what she described as a black cloud hovering in the sky and radiating a dim glow, from which a golden pyramid-shaped object had appeared. In the third report, a long-distance lorry driver on the road to Carmarthen had described seeing two figures in the road as he drove past, about 7 foot tall, dressed in red translucent material, with large featureless heads and humanoid arms. Both he and his passenger described a sudden chill as the lorry sped past the figures. In the fourth report, a mother and her 13-year-old daughter reported having watched a fantastic UFO air display over Milford Haven. They said it began with five lights hovering in the sky over the town. As they watched, one light detached itself from the group and moved out to sea, where it disgorged three more lights. Then a second light did the same. The new lights flew around in a circular pattern before returning to their parent craft, which in turn rejoined the main group of lights that was still hovering over the town. Three of the original five then detached themselves, flew out to sea and disgorged more craft, which then came back inland as a formation of nine red, green and silver lights. They watched the display for over 40 minutes. Billy sighed to himself and looked up into the fast-dimming night sky above. They were obviously not alone in having more visitations, but where would it all end this time? He had promised Pauline that if ever things like this started happening to the family again, they would start making plans to leave. What should he do now? He'd leave it for now, chance it and hope nothing else happened. He looked at his watch, 6 o'clock. He'd miss his early supper if he didn't get a move on, and tonight was going to be the first of many long nights, now that the calving season was here again. For the next 6 months he'd be spending every night, from midnight to 2 o'clock, in with the herd to watch over the mating, and often the whole night, in case any of them dropped a calf. He made his way slowly up the darkening drive, past the paddock, past the milking sheds, up around the corner to the welcoming lights of the farmhouse beyond, the mud lapping around his boots and the chill evening breeze pinking his cheeks. Pauline, jovial as ever, was joking with the kids as they all ate supper around the kitchen table. Only Gian remained uncommonly quiet in the corner, and to judge from the cheerfulness of the others, he'd kept his mouth shut about what he'd seen. "Don't mind Kay," Pauline told him as he walked in, "he's just got a bit of a headache." Billy smiled to himself. "Good lad, Kay. Billy pulled the collar of his donkey jacket up around his neck and hunched his shoulders against the cold wind as he made his way back down to the cowsheds at midnight. Lord, how he hated the first night of the calving season, having to leave home and hearth at the dead of night to linger around the cowsheds in the cold and tend the herd. Still, he thought to himself, that's the price you pay for being not only a dairyman who tends a herd, but one who does the calving as well. Many dairymen let the local vet handle all that sort of thing, but some, like him, preferred to know in advance which heifer had mated with which bull, so a special eye could be kept on them and the birth could be anticipated and as trouble-free as possible. Too many calves, in his experience, had never had a fair chance of a safe birth simply because they'd come into this world alone and unexpected, one single complication and they were stillborn. He trudged on, down the drive, towards the cowsheds. Funny, he thought to himself, how nervous the place made him these days, after all the years he'd spent here. Especially at night. He looked up at the dark silhouettes of the trees against the pale, moonlit sky and was aware how every shadow made him feel jumpy. He, of all people. He, who had spent a major part of his life wandering around the countryside at night. It was ridiculous. Or was it? He turned the light on outside the cowsheds, bathing the enormous concrete forecourt in a fierce glare. It made him feel better, but evidently did nothing to console the cows, who were agitated, as they had increasingly seemed to be for the last few weeks. Several times they'd stampeded while out grazing in the same field and had gone totally crazy for no reason, charging, en masse, through electrified or barbed wire fences, risking being badly cut up just to escape into the next field. He slid back the heavy iron locks on the shed gates and walked inside, stopping at each and every stall to check on each cow, looking for signs that they were coming into season and would be ready for insemination. Each one would be in season for only 12 hours at a time, so it was important to be sure. Similarly, if any of them was ready to drop a calf, she would have to be taken out and put on her own. It was an hour before he had checked all 100 cows to his satisfaction and had returned to the glare of the forecourt and securely locked and bolted the heavy iron gates. He was about to go across to the far side of the forecourt and turn off the lights for the night, when he heard the phone ringing, back at the farmhouse. He looked at his watch. 1 o'clock. Good God, who on earth would be phoning at that time of the morning? He felt a slight sinking feeling in his stomach. The sort that telegrams, and phone calls at that hour of the night, normally give you. It was only about 100 feet from the sheds to the house and he'd answered the phone within a minute. Hello, who's that? He asked, aware of the anxiety in his voice. Billy? Billy Coombs? He recognized the voice. It was Martin Chambers, from one of the neighboring farms. Martin? Is that you? What the devil do you want at this time of the morning? He asked, but good-humoredly. Now listen to me, Billy, said the gruff voice, what the hell do you think you're playing at? Your whole damn herd, must be 100 of them, have been rampaging all over my land for more than an hour now, making a hell of a mess. They woke me up just before midnight with all the noise they were making. They've damn near ruined all the feed for my herd, trampling it into the ground as they've been stampeding around my sheds. Billy chuckled to himself. No, you're wrong there, Martin. He corrected him, they're not mine. Couldn't be mine. I've only just come from my own sheds, where I've been with my herd for the past hour. I only left them to answer the phone. Well, it's about time you did answer it, came the angry retort. I've been ringing you over and over for the past hour without a reply. You can't have been with your cows, you were probably in bed, am I right? No, you're bloody not. I told you, Martin, I was in with my cows. If you had rung, I'd have heard the ringing. Anyway, what's it matter? They're not my damn cows anyway, as Al said. He was about to hang up, when the voice, calmer now, said, Billy, I know they're your cows because they've all got yellow and green tags in their ears. That's your marking, isn't it? Billy caught his breath. Martin was right, of course. That was his marking, and only his. What the bloody hell was going on here? Look, Martin, just hold on a minute. He told him, banging the telephone down on the hall table and hurrying out into the darkness. This was ridiculous. He'd been standing by the open front door, looking at the cowsheds during the entire conversation, and there was nothing unusual to see, just the illuminated sheds, locked and bolted, with the cows bedded down for the night, just as he'd left them. He shook his head, tutting and chuckling to himself as he jogged down the drive and into the brightly lit forecourt once again. One look over the gate and into the first set of stalls would confirm that they were there. What on earth that damn fool was going on about, was anybody's guess. Green and yellow tags indeed. He must be color blind. He gave a cursory glance over the gate to confirm the obvious, and stepped back, gasping. There was nothing there. The stalls, every one of them, were empty. Just the straw he had left the cows remained. The cows, 50 of them, had gone. Vanished. Only ill.Right. What about the others? He moved around to the adjacent gate and looked into the gloom of the second shed. He could hear no rustling movements of straw, nothing at all. Complete stillness. There was nothing there. They were empty, too. 50 cows, just vanished. His hands dropped to his sides, his knuckles scraping against the big iron padlock and chain that held the gates firmly shut. He looked down. Still locked. Firmly bolted. Then he looked up again and into first one shed and then the other. Nothing. Completely empty. But it was ridiculous, impossible. He'd been with them, just 5 minutes earlier. Or less. He'd only taken his eyes off the sheds for 30 seconds, the time it had taken him to answer the phone. Even if they had got out, which was absolutely impossible, they could never have got up the drive and passed the farmhouse in less than 15 minutes, and he'd been there, in the drive, or looking at the drive all the time. Impossible. It couldn't have happened. He looked into the sheds for a third time. Empty. 100 cows, just disappeared, vanished into thin air. Or, rather, vanished and appeared at Martin's farm. But how, and how could they have been there for over an hour, when he had been with them here for an hour? He turned slowly around and made his way up the drive to the farmhouse. What could have happened? What was happening? Was he going mad? Hallucinating? None of it any sense. Martin. His voice sounded as dazed as he felt. You to be right. I don't understand any of this, but you to be right. They are my cows. They just paused and reconsidered his explanation. If he didn't believe it himself, how could he expect Martin to believe it? They just seem to have got out without my noticing. I'll be right down in the car to pick them up. I'll leave the car with you and herd them in myself. He put the phone down, went into the lounge and flopped down into his armchair. He'd have a quick cigarette and collect his thoughts before he left. Bill? Ah. There you are, love. All finished for the night? Ready for a cup of tea before bed? It was Pauline. Bless her heart, she'd waited up for him, keep him company. He could only shrug in greeting. She noticed the bewildered look on his face. What's up, love? Take your coat off, put your feet up and tell me all about it. She reached out to help him off with the donkey jacket. He shied away. Can't take it off, love. I've got to go out. Down to Dale Farm down the road. At this time of night, whatever for? She looked amazed. Billy looked up at her and studied her expression. There was no fear there, there hadn't been for such a long time now, but how could he keep this to himself? He had to tell someone and she'd hear him herding the cows past the house in a minute in any case. He'd risk telling her. He had to. Sit down, love, he instructed her, and listen to this. When he'd finished, he looked at her long and hard to solicit a reaction. For a second or two he wondered if even she would believe him. It was all so ridiculous, so impossible, so pointless. She nodded quietly to herself, when he'd finished telling her. Her head bowed, her hands clasped tightly together. Then she looked up, frowning, but not registering the fear or panic he had seen on her face so frequently over previous months. You believe me, love? Don't be so daft, love. Of course I do, she murmured, looking up at him. It's happening all over again, isn't it? They're back, or it's back again, isn't it? Dear God, Billy, what are we going to do? What does it all mean, a whole herd of cows vanishing and appearing somewhere else at a different time. Why? For what possible reason? What are we going to do about it? For a moment he thought she was going to crack again. Then he noticed her expression grow resolute and the momentary panic dissipated. She stood up and offered her hand for him to take. He took it and she pulled him to his feet. Well, for a start you'd better go down to Chambers's and collect the herd. Get them locked away, I'll make a cup of tea and we'll go straight to bed when you get back. We'll try and work it out in the morning, but we'd better do as we normally do and keep it from the kids. She pushed him out of the door. How strange, he thought to himself, that it was she who was now stronger than he. Ironical, too, for hadn't it been he and Kieran who alone had shared the most recent sightings and kept them from her? Just as well, he reasoned, for if she thought that what had happened tonight wasn't an isolated incident, she'd not have been able to cope with it so well. He went to start the car. Nothing. It was dead. Nothing worked, not the lights, nor the engine. Just as before. He slumped forward onto the steering wheel for a moment, his forehead resting on the backs of his hands. Oh God, no. Not another one. It was only half a mile. He'd have to walk. He got out of the car and looked ahead of him into the inky blackness of the drive that wound up ahead of him. Only the faintest silver glow from a crescent moon lit the way ahead. He'd made the walk many times before up the dark, tree-lined drive and it had never unnerved him. But it did now. Terribly. He was even glad to meet Martin when he eventually got to Dale Farm, though the farmer was obviously less than happy to see him, and it was easy to see why. The mess his herd had made was dreadful, with sacks of carefully stored grain upturned, scattered and trampled everywhere. It took him 20 minutes to round the Banuki herd together and another half an hour to herd them down the lane, past the farmhouse and into the cowsheds again. He spared Martin any explanation, but had just apologized, said he didn't know how it could have happened and then left. Pauline was waiting for him on the porch with tea and sympathy after he'd got the job done. He was about to start talking about it again, when she pressed a finger to his lips. "Never mind, love," she whispered. "Tomorrow we'll talk about it." Billy nodded, his eyes downcast. Up until now, he'd managed to cope, but this was, well, this was just beyond him. If this could happen, anything could happen. The thought haunted him as he went to sleep. "This time," thought Pauline as she sneaked out of their bed, "it's my turn to let Billy sleep off the trauma of the night before." She tucked him up more firmly under the duvet. Let him sleep on for a bit. She'd get breakfast for Clinton and get him off to work and then get the kids breakfast and get them off to school and, for once, Billy could be last down. They could talk before he started work. She didn't call him until nearly 10 o'clock and he was none too pleased to begin with, but eventually grateful for chance to relive the experiences of the night before and try to get them into perspective. Not that it ultimately did any good. In fact, it was useless. What had happened quite simply defied explanation. "That's the worst of it, love," he had said to her, "this is so bizarre, so unlike any of the other things that have happened to other people in the area, I'm not even sure if those Bvora people would believe us, and they've heard just about everything. I don't know, I just don't know. The best thing is just to keep absolutely quiet about it, okay?" She agreed with him, secretly hoping nothing else of a similar nature would happen. Or worse. She could tell by his expression as he left, that he felt the same. So unlike him, thought Pauline as she tipped the leftovers of that morning's breakfast into the rubbish bin. For Billy to leave a single scrap of food, something definitely had to be wrong. Mind you, all things considered, it was hardly surprising. The experience of the previous week was obviously still preying on his mind. He'd once said to her that he thought he was going mad or having a nervous breakdown. He'd later said he was joking, but she doubted his sincerity. The herd had been troubling him, too. Cows were more than a livelihood to him. He really loved his herd, and the effect on them of what had happened that night had been devastating. The herd never stopped stampeding, panicking for no apparent reason, charging into electrified and barbed wire fencing over and over again. One cow had literally torn herself to pieces in her frenzy to escape from something unseen that had terrified her, and she later had to be destroyed. The rest of the herd had escaped into the farm next door, where Clinton worked, so often that Clinton's boss was beginning to lose patience with them. On top of all these problems, the entire herd's milk yield was understandably way down. And how would Billy be able to explain it all? Easily, but who would believe him? She watched from the porch as he and Clinton walked down to the paddock next to the milking sheds to feed the heifers. "Something the matter, Dad?" Clinton knew his father well, and he knew something was wrong. Billy normally relished the chance of having his eldest son to help him on the farm on his days off and talked non-stop before and after they started work. But not on this morning. Billy just plodded along next to him, silent and with a frown on his face. He shrugged. "No, nothing's wrong, Clint. Just got a quiet on, that's all." He'd have liked to tell Clint what the matter was, but he knew it was better not to. He hadn't told Pauline what had happened since the cows had vanished that night. A couple of days later, he'd gone WN to the cowsheds in the morning to get the cows out graze and had found two of the cows locked together the same stall. He'd been amazed, for what had happened was impossible. He'd fastidiously checked the herd 1 o'clock that morning, before going to bed, and was absolutely certain that each calving cow was comfortably properly in its stall. There was never any likelihood who being put in the same stall in any case. Such a mistake just couldn't be made. Apart from anything else, the cows in question would kick up too much of a fuss to let it happen. Yet it had happened. He knew he hadn't put them there, and he knew nobody else had been down there. So how had it happened? The unanswerable question kept nagging his brain, and the answer was always the same. Who, or whatever, had transported the entire herd from one farm to another on that first occasion, must have somehow and for some reason, transported one cow from one stall to another. Maybe, he had pondered, they had moved the cow somewhere else and brought it back to the wrong place? His thoughts on the subject had ended there, so bizarre were they becoming. He and Clint rounded the corner at the end of the drive, entered the sheds. Billy instructed Clinton to herd the heifers into the enclosed paddock opposite, while he went to check that there was enough hay for their feed. By the time he had returned with a few extra bales of hay, Clint had herded all the heifers out and securely chained and padlocked the high gates. They both heaved the bales of hay over the top, and the moment the feed hit the ground, the hungry animals were onto it. "Right, next the milking," Billy muttered, beckoning Clinton towards the little room adjoining the cowsheds opposite, where the milking machines were housed. They walked the 6 paces to the room, and Billy flicked the switch to start the machines. As he did so, he felt Clinton, who was standing behind him in the doorway, grab his arm violently. "Dad, Dad. My God, look. What happened?" He felt himself tense up, and dared hardly turn and look. Clinton was pointing to the paddock in front of them, into which they had just herded the cattle. It was empty, the bales of hay still on the ground, half eaten. Billy glanced across at Clinton. The boy's mouth was hanging open, his hand still pointing in the direction of the paddock. "But we just put them in there, 16 of them. We did, didn't we? Dot. Just now? Dot. I don't understand, what happened to them? Dot. Dad?" There was a note of panic in his voice now. He turned and looked at his father. "Dad? You don't look surprised, not really." Billy sighed and clenched his fists, trying to compose himself, to stop himself trembling. "Clint, I'm not really surprised. I've been half expecting something like this to happen again." "Again? It's happened before?" Billy explained everything. Clinton starting to shake his head in disbelief, but then obviously remembered what he'd just experienced for himself and nodded in recognition of what he was being told. "I believe it, Dad. I don't understand it, but I believe it, after what just happened. Where have they gone though? How do we get them back?" Billy prodded him out of the room. "Search me, Clint," he sighed. "We'd better just start looking." The words were no sooner out of his mouth, and the pair them out of the machine room, when Clinton grabbed his arm again and pointed to the enclosed paddock across yard, opposite the open paddock they had just put the heifers into. All 16 heifers were there, milling around, looking agitated. The gates to that paddock were still chained and padlocked as they had always been, as were the gates of paddock they had just left.